Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Keynote by CNBC Events. I'm Meg Terrell, CNBC's Senior Health and Science Reporter. On this podcast, we bring you in-depth, candid conversations with executives, experts, and thought leaders. Today, my conversation with Dr. Katherine Janssen, Senior Vice President and Head of Vaccine Research and Development at Pfizer. She joined me at CNBC's Healthy Returns Summit on May 11th, 2021, to talk about developing the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine in record time. Betting on the existing but unproven mRNA technology and the ongoing process of testing booster doses and combating variants. Here's our conversation.
I am so happy to get to be here with Katherine Janssen, one of the people who has really played such a pivotal role in delivering us out of this pandemic with Pfizer's vaccine. Katherine, if you could, just try to give us a sense of what this incredible, unprecedented year has been like for you.
Yeah, thank you, Meg, and thank you for having me on your show. Last year was clearly a year like no other, given the devastation of the pandemic and the urgent need to develop a vaccine to be able to protect people from this terrible virus and disease. We were tasked with doing something that has never been done before. Developing a vaccine in record speed last year. And so, needless to say, we had to change the way we operate, the way we work, all while this pandemic was raging around us. And so it was really a very different way of engaging with our colleagues, with outside entities, such as academia, governments, regulatory agencies, et cetera. So we essentially had to throw everything overboard that we ever knew how to do in under normal circumstances.
And one of the other things that was different too was you decided to bet on a technology, messenger RNA, that had never been really proven to work as a vaccine that at least got out on the market before. Tell us about those decision-making days, how you decided, because you've developed a lot of vaccines with different technologies, how you decided that mRNA was the right way to go for this pandemic.
Yeah, so as you noted, Meg, in my many years of doing vaccine research and development, I was very familiar, of course, with a number of different platforms. And we have assessed for other programs a number of different platforms before. So when it became clear that a pandemic would be upon us and we realized how little we know about the virus, what occurred to me is that in the absence of knowing what would be required for protection, the best platform to focus on would be one that triggers many different arms of the immune system. And we had 2 years prior, in 2018, started a collaboration with BioNTech on an mRNA platform-based influenza vaccine. So we knew from their experience in the oncology field, from our experiences already that we had working on this platform, that this platform was very much suited to, as I call, tick all the boxes of appropriate immune responses that we may need to combat this virus. And so it was also driven by the knowledge that the mRNA platform could be developed very quickly. It's essentially a mostly synthetic process. So that was going for the platform. We knew that we would, not knowing how long vaccine protection may last, should we be successful. It's a platform that can be boosted over and over again. So those were some of the considerations why I felt very comfortable that if we really need to have a comprehensive immune response, that platform would be uniquely suited to get us over the finish line.
The fact that this is an unknown technology, or not unknown anymore, but previous to this pandemic, also means there are many questions about it, including perhaps how long the protection might last from these vaccines. This is also a new virus, so questions about that as well. What do you expect with what you know right now about how long the protection your vaccine, how long that protection will be?
Yeah, so what we already have communicated recently is that we just did another analysis that showed very clearly that at least up to 6 months, we still have very good protection from COVID-19. What we don't know yet is, of course, how long will this protection last? And since we never had a vaccine license, we had a lot of experience actually with the RNA platform already, but no vaccine has been licensed before we licensed a vaccine for COVID-19. So, of course, we do not know how long vaccine protection really lasts. We can't look into the future. And so what we're actively doing is setting us up to study whether, for example, we can employ a booster immunization, and would that booster immunization bring us up, at least in terms of immunogenicity, to the levels that we had for the last 6 months after administering the second booster shot. This requires clinical trials. We're also very actively monitoring the immune responses to our vaccines. What is a very important issue for us is, of course, the occurrence and of new SARS-CoV-2 variants. So we're assessing that on an ongoing basis. So in a nutshell, we're doing everything clinically right now, in addition, of course, to follow our phase 3 study that is still active and will continue to be active for quite some time. We're doing a lot of other clinical evaluation that helps us to stay ahead of the virus in terms of vaccine protection, how long will it last, in terms of what do we need to ensure that should variants of this virus emerge that may evade immune protection from our vaccines, to get us really ready to address that problem in a very, very fast manner.
And one thing that we know that we need to understand in order to be able to assess boosters and just to better assess future vaccines potentially as well is what's known as correlates of protection, that level of immune response, whether it's antibodies or I don't know if you could employ some way of gauging T cells as well, to know that you'll be protected from disease. How close do you think we are to really understanding the correlates of protection for COVID-19 vaccines?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Meg, actually, because it's really, there are lots of discussions ongoing of how to get to a potential correlate of protection. And just for general information, for many of the vaccines that are already licensed and have been successfully used for many years, there is no correlate of protection. We just fundamentally do not know what a level of an immune response or what even the immune response is that is required to be protective. So we are in a similar situation here. There's a lot of studies that are being conducted. For example, we try to correlate the neutralizing antibodies, for example, and ask the question, is a neutralizing antibody level in any way correlated with a breakthrough of protection? We also need to look at the persistence of T cell responses. So we have already described that our vaccine induces good memory, both T and B cell responses. So chances are that upon stimulation, whether that's by natural exposure or by a booster immunization, we will get back to the levels that we were. But we still do not have a grasp of what it is actually that we need. So, for example, we have studied the ability of our immune cell to neutralize the different variants that are emerging. We find that in some of them, our neutralization titers are actually much lower than for other variants. Nevertheless, when we look at protection, it doesn't correlate with protection. So even though we have lower neutralizing antibodies, we do see still full protection against those variants. So that argues that neutralizing antibodies is not the only requirement for protection, but there are other immune mechanisms at play that lead to protection. So it's a very complicated story. And based on our prior experience with other vaccines, we actually may never come up with a true correlate of protection for this particular virus.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade, New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker, London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
I wonder also how you personally think about the questions that people have about a vaccine that was developed so quickly and that is based on a new technology. You know, a lot of people say, how can we be assured of the long-term safety of a vaccine like this? And then there are sort of, there's a spectrum of people's feelings about these things. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the effect on women's periods even and changes there that some folks say is actually a legitimate thing to look at. How do you just kind of look at all of these different questions around the safety of the vaccine and how well understood it can be after a year of study?
Yeah, so we understand that because the vaccine was developed in such a short period of time, and there was limited clinical experience before we started our phase 3 study, that there is a certain anxiety in the mind of certain individuals. I think that's understandable. However, I think what I would say is we have conducted the evaluation of this vaccine under the same stringent conditions that we usually apply to all of our other vaccines that we have successfully developed. So the size of the study is enormous, over 46,000 individuals. The safety and tolerability of that vaccine studied in this large population is benign. We have not seen worrisome signals out of this large study. And furthermore, after we got the emergency use authorization, now we have immunized or have applied already over 100 million doses of this vaccine. And so we do extensive surveillance. We call that pharmacovigilance, surveillance of the vaccine safety profile that we see now in huge numbers of individuals. And again, when you compare the experience from our very large phase 3 study with the experience that we see now in many, many more individuals, again, we see the same safety profile that we have already identified during our ongoing phase 3 studies. And we are actually ahead when you think about this. Compare what we are doing to what is usually happening when we roll out vaccines. It takes a long time under normal circumstances to roll out a vaccine after it's licensed and start immunizing large numbers in the population. We are ahead here due to the pandemic. We really had to press on the accelerator to immunize as many people as we could with the available vaccine doses as fast as possible. So we're generating those data in real time in much larger numbers of individuals that we usually get to study after we first roll out or have rolled out other vaccines. So this gives us, that personally, this gives me and us great comfort that we have probably seen everything that there is to, that there is to be seen with this vaccine.
Hmm. I wonder also your thoughts on the potential of this technology for vaccines going forward, and maybe therapeutics as well, as I know that was sort of originally how it was being looked at, mRNA. And then this pandemic came along and really proved its power as a vaccine technology. Do you see this as the future of flu shots? Do you see any limitation really to what mRNA might be able to do when it comes to vaccines?
I think the great success of the mRNA vaccines in addressing COVID-19 has clearly opened up a large number of possibilities. So as I already mentioned, we started in 2018 working with BioNTech on a seasonal influenza vaccine. And the reason for this was that we always had great confidence in this platform. So the RNA right now is what I call a platform approach. It can be applied to many people. And the profile, the immune profile of this platform is very important when one thinks about a seasonal influenza vaccine. Because what we want to do, we want to have better vaccines for older individuals. We know that our immune systems age, and unfortunately, they start aging already in very early years. And so we have seen that with this platform, we can induce a de novo immune response in younger and older individuals pretty much to a similar level. And clearly, the efficacy of the vaccine was also very similar. So this is really, really potent when one thinks about applying this technology for seasonal influenza vaccine, where we really haven't managed with the current technology to protect particularly older individuals very well. So this is, in my mind, a very powerful approach to get us to ultimately more potent seasonal influenza vaccines. Couple that, particularly when one thinks about influenza, with the yearly race to get the vaccine composition, meaning the selection of the strains and what should be in the vaccine, to get this right. And part of the reason also why the potency of our seasonal influenza vaccines are variable is that sometimes late in the production cycle of those vaccines, other strains seem to dominate, that the four strains in the vaccine do not address appropriately. So we see often that one strain is, we don't protect well against one or two strains. And with the RNA platform, because we can do it so fast and pivot so fast, we have the opportunity, even if something, a strain is emerging later in the production cycle, we can pivot and then make the strain that is likely to cause huge problems during the influenza season.
That was Dr. Katherine Janssen, Senior Vice President and Head of Vaccine Research and Development at Pfizer. She joined me at CNBC's Healthy Return Summit on May 11th, 2021. The Keynote is produced by the CNBC Events team. For more information on upcoming CNBC events and how you can join us, please visit cnbcevents.com. I'm Meg Terrell. Thanks for listening.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.